afternoon. I'm Tom Lounges. Thank you so much for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here on 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. We're going to start off with the Cashbox Kings. We've got Joe from the group joining us to talk about their Royal Mint album on Alligator Records, as well as their performance on October 20th with Shamika Copeland at Memorial Opera House in Valparaiso. Let's start things off with House Party. Today, that's what we should be singing. Cashbox Kings off Royal Mint. We're going to have one of the members, Joe, joining us shortly. Again, they are performing on Saturday, October 20th at Memorial Opera House, the historic Memorial Opera House, turning 125 years old this year. Brightside Music is bringing a great blues show that has not only the Cashbox Kings, but also Shamika Copeland. We had Shamika on this program on Tuesday evening, and she's looking forward to it. I'm sure the Cashbox Kings are looking forward to it, and I know I am looking forward to it, as you should be. And after hearing some of the music Tuesday that Shamika has on her new album, America's Child, and now today we're going to hear some stuff off Royal Mint, I think you're going to want to be there when these two great powerhouse blues acts out of Chicagoland and Alligator Records take the stage at Memorial Opera House. We're going to get things going with Joe here in just a minute, but first, this is a song that kind of, well, it sums up the city of Chicago today. There's a lot of violence going on there. It's in the headlines every night, and it's addressed by the group on this one called Blues for Chirag.
Lord have mercy. What's gonna happen to my hometown? Standing on the corner, 43rd well. Yes, I was standing on the corner, 43rd well.
Blues for Chirag. That is another track off the Cashbox Kings album for Alligator Records, Royal Mint. They're going to be in town in Valparaiso at the historic Memorial Opera House, along with Shamika Copeland, coming up on October 20th. It's a Brightside Music production. Our good friend Rob Harkle bringing this amazing double bill of blues to town. And I understand we have a couple of the Cashbox Kings on the phone, Joe Nosek and Oscar Wilson. I believe you're both with us?
That's correct.
All right, excellent. I got to tell you guys, I love this album. It is so old school, and you play with all the tools in the toolbox. You've got the harmonica, the upright bass, the electric bass, the Roland keyboards, the brassy, sassy section. You got it all. You epitomize the blues sound of yesterday, as well as keeping it contemporary today. Tell me a little bit about the group and how you guys got together. You're kind of the point guys on this group.
Yeah, that's right. You want me to go first, Oscar, and then have you come in?
Yeah.
So the band started about 18 years ago with a bunch of young guys. We were in our 20s at the time, mid-early 20s, and we wanted to pay tribute to the classic era of Chicago blues from the 40s and 50s, Chess Records, B-Day Records, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Jimmy Reed, people like that, because mm-hmm. we felt that a lot of the blues music that was being put out was more oriented towards the heavy rock, blues, guitar-driven music popularized by Stevie Ray Vaughan, who I'm a fan of, but, you know, that's just one side of the blues. So we kind of wanted to bring it back old school, and so we got together and started this group, and about 5 years down the line from that, we ran into Oscar Wilson, my buddy on the line with me and lead singer of the group now. And he grew up down on the South Side and knew a lot of the originators personally and as a boy of who we emulated. So mm-hmm. kind of a perfect match. And here we are today. We're on Alligator Records. We've got 9 releases out there, and we're doing everything we can to preserve this.
You've got. Go ahead. I was going to say, you've got a lot of albums out. I think there's like 7 or 8, correct?
Yeah, I think 9.
Nine.
Yeah, 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many on Alligator? This is the first time with Royal Mint that I really saw you come on my radar. They've really started pushing this album heavy.
This is our debut with them.
Okay.
Previous records were on Blind Pig Records, and our first Alligator, we'll be recording another one with them this January. Hopefully, we'll be out later next spring.
Okay, so all the previous albums are on Blind Pig?
3 of them. There was one on Blue Bella, and then I think the first 4 were self-released.
Okay. Are the previous albums similar to this in style? I mean, do you drink from all the wells as far as the different styles of blues on the earlier albums as well? Because this one really jumps.
Oscar, how about you take that one?
Wow. I think this is the better one of all of them, though.
Okay.
Well, the last two were really, I think, were like my favorite because we don't go into a long, drawn-out thing about it. It just comes up. You know, it's like when you have a conversation, what comes up comes out. And we don't do a whole lot of, what you call, Joe?
Rehearsal
and stuff. It would just get an idea, and the musicians are top flight, and we just go in and do it, you know. And because with me, my first few takes is my best few takes. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it don't take a long time for us.
Go with spontaneity.
We hit the studio, we record live in the studio, everyone in there, and we kind of have a general plan, but a lot of magic just kind of happens and it comes about when we go in there, and songs that we hadn't even rehearsed or thought about will just kind of be born right there in the studio. But I think all the previous releases were, you know, the traditional Chicago blues sound is kind of our home base, and we take little divergent paths off that into like rockabilly, jump swing, delta blues, maybe earlier R&B and kind of, you know, put our stamp on it. But Chicago blues is always kind of the tone of what we do, the home base. Yeah.
The song we just played, Blues for Chirag, that is one that you two wrote together. So I'm assuming you have steep roots here in Chicago. Are you both native from Chicago?
No, just me.
I'm from the suburbs. He doesn't let me forget that.
What part of the suburbs? South Side, I hope?
Well, I'm a White Sox fan.
Okay.
That's where my people came from originally, but Elmhurst, Illinois, Oak Park.
All right. Well, the fact that you like the Sox, we'll consider you a Southsider.
That sounds good. I'm Southside at heart. Uh-uh. Uh-uh. It's Oscar, why don't you tell them a little bit about the song, Chirag song?
Oh, well, growing up in on the South Side, actually 1 mile straight down the street from White Sox Park, which was on 35th and Wells, and I lived on 43rd and Wells, and which 43rd is called Muddy Waters Drive now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a neighborhood that I grew up in, until I was well in my, I guess you would say my mid-40s before actually moved around, but I still go back and I visit old friends and stuff. And it was just how the neighborhood has changed and how things are changing, which, you know, in a live performance, I would be like, the kids could play double Dutch hopscotch, hide and go seek, you know, things like that that they can't do anymore.
Right.
We played football in the streets, you know, roller skated, stuff like that. Shot marbles and things, but you can't do that no more because it's so dangerous.
Right.
You know, so many people just come at this shooting like the Wild Wild West and people are getting killed. So, you know, me and Joe just thought we should do some kind of ode to it, I guess you would call it. And we sit down and we collaborated, and this is what we come up with.
It was a strong song. I mean, you're citing all the crime going on there, and if you come to Chicago, you just might get shot. And the fact that that's torn right from the headlines is very scary. And you mentioned the mayor in there about trying to help, but that he's not from the hood, basically, and doesn't understand what's
right.
going on. Do you think I'm going to put you in the box here a little bit. What do you think the answer is coming from that neighborhood and being from that neighborhood? How can it turn around? I mean, like you said, how can we get it back to where the kids don't have to hide all the time and be afraid of being shot just by coming out?
Well, there was an idiot in the White House yesterday. And
it could be said that there are many of them, but that's beside the point.
Okay, but one idiot in particular, Kanye West. And the thing about it, he has some of the right idea because he wasn't in the era that I was in. When
right.
I came up, like the I came up through the 50s, 60s, you know, and I was there when 43rd Street was a middle class neighborhood because. They had jobs. They had the meat factories. They had the slaughterhouse. They had the packing companies. They had the can companies. They had the cookie companies, cakes and pies. You know, there were plenty of jobs for men. But somewhere along in the 70s and stuff, they stopped. The companies started moving. And, you know, we had the steel mills, too. Let me not forget that.
Right.
Trucking companies.
Right.
And all the jobs stopped going to the women. So it wasn't nothing left for the men to do but hustle.
Right.
You see, but there ain't a man down there right now, maybe one or two, but most men down there, all they want is a decent job. Everybody wants a nice car, a nice house, a two-car garage, and 2.3 kids, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when the jobs went away, the backbone of the whole neighborhood went away because the people who were making money, then their kids inherited the property, then they flooded it with the neighborhoods with the drugs. So I know personally people who would love to have a job making $15-16 an hour, but they're not here. Then they give us McDonald's and, you know, those type of jobs.
Right.
And then they gave the black women the better job. You see what I'm saying? So now the man, he's got to hustle to feel like a man in his house.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? He got to do illegal things. But everybody don't want to do illegal things. If they were, you know, I'm not saying, I'm not doing a Trump go back to the stockyard because it messed up the rivers and everything.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, if they do bring the jobs back, you know, decent paying jobs, it would be less because everybody, you know, they looked out for everybody, you know, like it takes a village to raise. But not everybody strung out. Not everybody, but right. A lot of them strung out and stuff because they have no jobs and they get what they can back. Some take it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Some sell it. You know what I'm saying? So if the jobs would come back, you know, steel mills open back up or whatever, and people had decent jobs, this would actually go away.
Give a little self-respect back.
Yeah, some self-respect, especially for the men.
Right.
You know, there's none.
We are.
You know, and.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to reintroduce you guys for the listeners. We are listening to Oscar Wilson and Joe Nosek. They are members of the Cashbox Kings. They've got a new album out, Royal Mint, on Alligator Records, coming to Memorial Opera House in Valparaiso. And we're talking about their song Blues for Chirag, which we opened up the show with, along with House Party, a couple of classic examples of what Cashbox Kings sound like. And Oscar, you mentioned that you were born and raised there. Where are you living these days? You're still in Chicago, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And
I'm more or less on the outskirts. I mean, I'm at the division line between Indiana and Chicago in the Wolf Lake area.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good area out there.
Yeah.
Joe, you're still in the suburbs, or did you move into Chicago proper finally?
I'm in the far northern suburb of Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay, you moved farther away.
I went up there, and I actually have a teaching post at the university. I make a lot of trips down to Chicago now.
Okay.
And do my business musically and visit family and friends, and then hit the highway back home.
Now, are you teaching music at the university?
I'm teaching writing.
Okay.
Music. I'm lucky enough to do two things that I love, teach and write.
Well, speaking of writing, you wrote a song that I want to play next that, again, is ripped from the headlines, strikes a chord with so many people, especially here in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland, where ethnicity and the melting pot really came together here in the Midwest, and that is the Build the Wall song. Obviously, the title kind of suggests who it's about and what it's about. But, Joe, tell me about the writing of this song, Build the Wall, and then we're going to play it.
Well, basically, it was, you know, it's a piece of social satire, political satire about the situation going on in our country, especially coming out of the last election. And I saw my in-laws are immigrants. They came to this country legally because there was a shortage in the field that they work in, and they've been productive citizens, pay their taxes, never committed a crime, they learned English. My father-in-law, the day he became a citizen, joined the U.S. Army to pay back the country. But yet, because of the climate we live in, he's facing more ignorance and discrimination than he ever has before. And my wife, as first-generation American, just because of her last name and maybe the look of her face, she's taken an increased amount of intolerance and just ignorance with people she interacts with. Not all people, but a small and vocal size population. And it seemed that after the last election, people felt because the president, I think that they have a right to do the same thing.
Right.
And this was reacting against it. And it's not really against the political party. It's more about we need to stand up and respect each other and treat each other with dignity as human beings. And so, you know, I've got a lot of good reactions for the song. Mainly, I've got some bad reaction either, because people don't understand that it's satire, it's right. irony, and other people just say, no, I'm for what's going on in the White House, but that's for the listener to decide. But I felt, for me personally, I needed to take a stance, and mm-hmm. not just for my family members, but a lot of friends that I have of different groups in this country that I think have found themselves increasingly targeted by ignorance.
Right, right. The whole secret to everything, I think, is tolerance. We all have to appreciate each other's pluses. You know, we all bring something to the table, so to speak. And I think this song kind of underscores the feeling. And I was wondering how it was when you performed. I'm assuming you performed this song, since it is so powerful, and what the audience response is. And after that answer, we'll go ahead and play this.
Well, I got to admit, we're pretty selective about when and where we play it, and I'm very sensitive to it. So I never play it without talking to promoters. And there's a certain part of the country where I know I can play it, and I got everyone behind me. There's other parts of the country where I'm not quite sure. I even had club owners or promoters in certain parts of the country say, you know, I love that song, and I want you to play it, but I ask maybe if you refrain from playing it, because I'm afraid people are going to take it seriously and really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or not like it. So, you know, I don't think I'm necessarily be playing it, but if you look this up online, a filmmaker friend of mine in Chicago, we put together a video for it that I think is very timely. And so, yeah, I guess I'm very judicious about when and where we play it.
Now, is the video on the website, on the Cashbox Kings website?
That is a good question. If it's not, I will put it up there right now after this interview. I think it is. It's definitely. I will.
All right. CashboxKings.com is where you need to go to find out more about the group. Let's play that song we've been talking about. This is written by Joe. We've got Joe and Oscar, both from the Cashbox Kings, joining us. And this is off their latest album, Royal Mint. Let's not build that wall.
Build a wall. You can grab away
Off Royal Mints, a little tongue-in-cheek there, some satirical blues, if you will. Build That Wall, Joe Nosek of the Cashbox Kings wrote that one. I've got Joe with us, as well as Oscar Wilson. They are the vocalists of the group, and they're coming to Memorial Opera House in Valparaiso on October 20th with Shamika Copeland. And it's not only a great pairing because you're both alligator artists and you're both Chicago-based because of that, but Shamika's new album, America's Child, also tackles some pretty topical things and brings it to the blues world, like that song does, and like your previous one we talked about, Blues for Chirac. Do you think we're seeing more and more of this because of this administration, this political time? Blues have never really addressed politics too much, at least the blues I remember listening to.
I mean, it has always addressed it, but whether it was paid any attention to or not.
Okay.
Because certain songs of old, you know, you have to be listening beyond the music itself. Like a lot of people get so wrapped up in the music itself that they really not paying much attention to the lyrics.
I think a great example is Jimmy Reed's Big Boss Man.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that.
That's actually about a slave driver or overseer for sharecroppers. Beating on the workers to pick more cotton for them, and that's why I think it's ironic that people will complain on Facebook or different discussion sites and say, "Oh, stop, leave the politics out of music. It's got no place." And I said, "Well, you ever listen to Stevie Wonder records from the 70s? You ever listen to Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Sam Cooke, Sly and the Family Stone, James Brown? This is nothing new. I think it goes way back, and blues music itself, I have no culturally or in my life experience, I have no direct connection to the roots of it, but it came out of a struggle by people who faced visceral violence and racism and intolerance, and it was a way of expressing that struggle and trying to find some type of solace in their experience. So when people say leave the politics out of blues, I'm kind of like, where do you think this music came from? It wasn't invented by Clapton or John Mayall.
Right. It was
you think of Lightnin' Hopkins, all his prison songs, in which he had quite a few of them, how he worked on Bud Russell Farm, and said, you don't want to be down there on Bud Russell's farm, And Stevie Wonder said, and which is really coming to form back in, I think it was the album Talking Book, and he's saying, "Your name is Big Brother," And it is really coming to now about Big Brother actually watching you,
right?
And when he say you might have the cash, but you can't cash in your face because we don't want your kind living in here. And you know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's always been there.
Okay. Joe, how did you mention that you have no investment in the early days of the blues, that you've kind of come to this, I guess, later on. How did you get into the blues, being a suburban guy and obviously going into teaching, things like that? It's not something you would normally think would fall into the blues realm. How did you find the blues, and why did the blues embed itself in you?
I mean, I did it kind of generation 2.0, my father's generation, was baby boomer. But my dad listened to the Stones, and a lot of the white kids here in the 60s who got hip to blues for the first time in my dad's generation, they got hip to it from younger white musicians like the Rolling Stones that who emulated Little Walter and Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. And, you know, I would get my dad's Stones records. My dad wasn't a blues fan, but he had these Stones records, and I'd be listening to them 7, 8 years old and look at the songwriting credits, Jagger Richards. Then all of a sudden you get McKinley Morningfield, Chester Burnett. And I this is before Google, so I'd have to go down to the library and try to find out who these guys were. Once I heard the original versions of these songs, I said, well, Stones are cool, but man, right. Muddy Waters, that's really where it's at. And
right.
The first time I heard the original, man, it, you know, put a chill up and down my spine, and I said, I got to figure out how this music is played because it hits such a raw emotional nerve with me. And like I said, I have no connection to the struggle that this music came out of, but musically, it's something that hits me very deeply as a human being, and I just said, man, I got to learn more about this. I want to try to play it as best I can.
It's interesting because years ago, when I was working at a club called Point East in the late 70s, we had B.B. King there, and I did an interview for B.B. for Scholastic Magazine, and I remember him saying that, you know, I said, well, what about, you know, the watered-down blues versions that the Stones or Cream or all these other groups, Foghat, Savoy Brown, are doing? Are you upset by that, that they've kind of reinvented and taken all these great songs that the blues artists struggled to make and really got pennies, and they made millions? And he says, no, he said, because a whole generation of young white music fans discovered who we are because of them. So he took it in stride. And to hear you say that underscores exactly what he told me all those years ago, that you found this song, you tracked it back to the originators. And because of artists like yourself who are now playing it, it gave relevance once again to these senior bluesmen. And it really hit home when you said that. Those quotes from BB came back to me.
Yeah, those senior bluesmen will never make the money or get the fame that the British people who copied and emulated them. But at the same time, they did get some recognition and a little bit of money that they may not have ever gotten. Never going to be enough, but it was, I think, for a lot of them, reaffirming to have that recognition in their lifetime. And I think most of those guys, sincerely, that I've talked to from that generation, sincerely appreciated what groups like the Stones did, because there's no doubt the love that people like Keith Richards or Jagger have, or Little Walter and Muddy Waters, and people like that.
Let's talk a little bit about the other Cashbox Kings. As you guys both mentioned earlier, you've got top shelf guys there. You don't have to rehearse a lot. It's a lot of spontaneity because these guys know their chops. In particular, let's talk first about Kenny Smith. He is your drummer, at least on most of the tracks here. And I know Kenny had played with Muddy himself when he was very young.
Yeah, Kenny literally was born in Muddy Waters' basement. His father, Willie Big Eye Smith, was Muddy's drummer, and when Kenny came over the hospital, that's where he lived, in Muddy Waters' basement on the south side. And, you know, when he was a kid, he told me every Tuesday night he'd go to poker night at Muddy's house with his dad, and it'd be Muddy, his dad, Pine Top Perkins, Jimmy Rogers, James Cotton, all playing poker together.
Wow.
So those are just his dad's friends. But, you know, when I started the band, Kenny said, you know, I really want to be part of this because I love this music, but it's hard for me to find people my age. Most of the people I play this music with are 80 years old or older, my dad's friend. And so he really wanted to come on board when we started this group. So, you know, Kenny has a direct, you know, familial and cultural relationship to this music. And then there's other guys like Billy Flynn in the band, who's, you know, one of the most underrated, I think, blues guitar players in the world. And he toured the world playing with people like Otis Rush and Buddy Guy and Junior Wells and Jimmy Rogers and Pine Top Perkins and, you know, these originators. And he knew these people. He played with them. And then, you know, we have a group of younger musicians, too, a young piano player from Japan she's in her 30s, but she's one of the best blues and boogie-woogie players in the world. And other younger people like me who just heard this music and said, wow, this is unreal. There's something to this that I'm going to follow.
Wow. Now, how long has this lineup been together? I know you two have been together for quite a while. Are these the players that are on all the previous albums as well, or are some of these guys new to the band?
Lee, the piano player, is new because our buddy Barrelhouse Chuck played piano on probably the five or six recordings previous to this, and he passed away a couple of years ago.
I remember that.
But Billy, Oscar, Kenny, and I, we've all been there for, I don't know, close to 15 years now. So,
wow. What's it like? What's the recording situation like when you guys go in the studio? I know, Oscar, you mentioned that you don't do a lot of rehearsal before. Do you record live, old school, or do you do a lot of overlaying tracks kind of thing? I'm feeling a very live sound on this entire album, whether it's the old school Traveling Riverside blues, whether it's the brassy, sassy stuff, or whether it's traditional Chicago blues. I'm feeling a very live spirit on every track as it goes through the album.
Yeah, that's it. We get in the room together, and probably 95% of what's on there is just live. In one room together, all, you know, standing shoulder to shoulder, making the music like they used to do back in the 40s and 50s. Because, like Oscar said, the vibe and the atmosphere that you create in that studio is, to us, more important than kind of the gimmickry and all the technological tricks you can use to record an album these days. But for us, where it's at is being in one room together, doing stuff live, and just feeding off that energy from each other, and then just, you know, stuff happens. Music gets created, new ideas come out of it.
Oscar, how did you get into the blues? Do you have it in the DNA? Is it something that's in the family? Is it something you picked up by living on the South Side? How did you find the blues and become a musician?
Yeah, man, it's in the DNA. My father was a blues musician.
Okay.
Which he passed away 2 months before I was born in 1953. August of 1953, I was born in October of 1953.
Okay.
And he played blues on South Side, West Side. You know, so he left the scene kind of early. And in my house, me being the youngest of nine children, my mother was a great fan of the blues, and my older siblings were, you know, some were blues, some were Motown, some were doo-wop, you know, and some were gospel, and so I got a dose of everything, and it kind of shows in what I do.
So your whole family, your brothers and sisters, were also musical? Did you guys do like a family group kind of thing?
No, we didn't do a family group, but we all, after dinner, you know, we all had a family sit-down hour where we all sang. You know, sometimes it would be spiritual, sometimes it would be doo-wop, sometimes it would, you know, things like that. But my great-grandmother, well, I come from, music has been in the Wilson family some kind of way. Since slavery, because my great-grandfather, great-grandmother were slaves, but they actually taught music, you know. So, and then I guess my grandfather, my father, and all of them took it up. So it was just, you know, I guess spiritually passed on to me, because my mother said I'm so much like my father, even though I never seen him. But even, you know, to the style of music he liked, it just was in me. It's like, you know, not a reincarnation, but, you know, it's like it was placed in me. And ever since I was a three-year-old, as far back as I could remember, when the other kids were playing, I was listening to the music. You know, because they would have, people would come over, and my mother would cook fish and spaghetti and stuff like that. And they would be around playing on the folk guitars and harmonica. That was before everything went amplified. And, you know, they would just be sitting in that room playing different people, Big Smokey Smothers, Junior Wells, Lil Mac, Elmo James, and a lot of them would just come by my house because they knew my father.
That's some pretty impressive company that you were raised with, and I can understand why you were inspirited enough to follow this as a career. Is it full time for you? I mean, I know Joe said he's teaching as well. Are you full time doing the music scene?
Yes, I'm full time.
Okay,
I'm retired.
Okay,
yeah.
Joe, I want to talk to you a little bit about production. You produced this album. And again, as we've mentioned, there's all these different styles that are on this album, whether it's jump blues or field blues or straight-up brass Chicago-based blues out of the West Side, or West Coast, rather. When you went into production on this, I've got to wonder, who inspired you as a producer? Who did you look to? We hear about musical influences, but a lot of production people are influenced as well. And I've got to think, because of the way you record and because of the different heritage that we've talked about here, that maybe Willie Dixon, who was the main producer at Chess Records, had some kind of influence on you. Did you ever study his work, or how involved was his presence in your production skills?
Well, I think Willie Dixon is one of the great architects of blues music in general, especially the Chicago blues. And I can't pretend to have thousands of the talent that he does, or the kind of the vision that he does. What I just try to do with all these recordings is I try to be hands off as much as I can, just get the players together, make sure Oscar and I are getting together to write songs together. I come up with ideas, run it past Oscar, and then we sit down and have songwriting sessions. You know, I try to select songs that we cover that maybe haven't hit the mainstream or are kind of overplayed and tried. I try to find different things that people haven't heard before. And then I try to, like, find different musical avenues that are related to the blues but not necessarily directly Chicago blues. And there's going to be a heavy dose of that Chicago blues on every album that we do. But I also like, because players in the band so talented and can play so many different styles so well, I really like to showcase everybody's talents and kind of the fact that, you know, blues is the mother of all American popular music. And, mm-hmm. and it had a baby and they named it rock and roll and jazz and gospel and all these other styles that came out of it. So I like to kind of show that the different roads that blues has traveled down and music that's been come out of it. So that's really what I see as a producer, is just get people together, get this music kind of loosely together, but don't try to put a stranglehold on anyone or force anything. And it's worked, I think, because a lot of those records, magic happens not in the preparation for it, but what actually happens once you step in the studio with those guys.
Okay. We've already played a House Party. We've played Build That Wall and Blues for Chirac. Let's play another song, and then we'll come back a final time and talk. What would you guys like me to play? What do you want the listeners to hear?
Ask, is there anything you want to listen to? Well, Facebook, I guess.
Yeah. If you want another original that Oscar and I co-wrote that I think is contemporary in its theme, there's a song called If You Got a Jealous Woman, Facebook Ain't Your Friend. So it's just an update of the old, you know, blues song about creeping around on your woman or on your man.
Right.
But in this day and age, you got to be extra careful because you're going to get yourself busted more easily because of social media presence. So maybe we'll play that one.
All right. This is track 7. Again, this is Royal Mint. It's the latest album from Cashbox Kings. We've got Joe and Oscar from the band on the show. They're going to be performing with Shamika Copeland on October 20th at the Historic Memorial Opera House in Valparaiso. We'll be back a final time to look to the future a little bit about the forthcoming next album and the show itself. Let's do this one. This is If You Got a Jealous Woman, Facebook Ain't Your Friend. Truer words never spoken.
I'm telling you people, I think this is the end. I'm telling you people, I think this is the end. My woman got on Facebook, busted me again. I can't help it, woman, if people take a liking to me. I can't help it if women take a liking to me. When you post those pics, Facebook tells on me.
mama, please keep your hands off me. I got a red-toed woman, she just might cut me. You can kiss me, woman, but please don't use your tongue. You can kiss me, woman, but please don't use your tongue. If it gets on Facebook, might just get me hung.
Careful what you put on Facebook. Big Brother is watching, and so is your significant other. If you got a jealous woman, Facebook ain't your friend. That was co-written by my two guests today, Joe Nosek and Oscar Wilson, both vocalists and primaries in the Cashbox Kings band, signed to Alligator Records, and coming to Memorial Opera House in Northwest Indiana in Valparaiso, along with Shamika Copeland, brought to you by Rob Harkle and Brightside Music, a friend of this show, and I'm so happy to see this show coming. We haven't done a good blues show in Northwest Indiana in a while, and this is going to be a great pairing. Have you guys played with Shamika on other shows?
Yeah, we have. She's a good friend of ours. She's an amazing human being and a very, very talented blues artist, and, you know, kind of carrying the mantle of the queen of the blues these days.
Right.
We've done double bills with her before, and she and I are going to sing on our new album. We got a duet that she and Oscar are going to do together. It's going to be great. So, we really love anytime we get to share a bill with her, because she's just an amazing human being, talented musician.
Any chance that she's going to join you to do that new song with Oscar on stage? Are you guys to that point yet?
We're pretty spontaneous, but not quite that fun. Oscar and I still got maybe one more verse we're working on, but I wouldn't rule out her and Oscar doing something together at some point. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Now, speaking of the writing, you two have written a couple of different songs on this album alone. What is the creative process when the two of you get together? How does it work? What if I were a fly on a wall? What would I see in the creative process of the two of you?
That's hard to answer. It's according to what's going on.
Okay.
You know? I mean, like, it was like one song that we made, Blacktopping, you know? It was just a comment, you know? We were at Purdue University and down in Lafayette, and had one of those blues dancing, and all the pretty women were there, you know, at them cat type of dances. And Joe asked me, what was I going to do after the thing? And I told him I was going blacktopping. And said, you know what? That'll be a nice song. But what does it mean? You know, so I say, you know what? You might be right. And went home, and we started writing it. And, you know, and it came out to be one of our biggest songs.
Wow.
Now,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Joe.
Now, a lot of the songs would just be something Oscar says off the cuff, but Oscar's got a thousand witticisms that crack me up on a regular basis, and I'll write them down, and you know, I said, hey, we got to make a song out of that phrase that you say, or just ideas that I get. I'll have, like, a basic idea of a theme that I think is important that we should cover, and then one of us will get, like, a few lines or some music, and then we'll sit down with a couple guitars and just hash it out. And it always works really well. Whenever we sit down, we're a good team. I think we balance each other out really well.
Now, you write on guitar as opposed to keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, both of you are multi-instrumentalists, as I understand, but you don't play with the band, other than Joe. I know you do harmonica. Oscar, yeah. Do you do any instrumentation on stage?
Well, not really, unless it's a long set, maybe, because Joe might play drums. He can also play guitar. I can play guitar a little and harmonica. So it's according to how long the, you know, if it's one of those long, drawn-out things, yeah. You know, we can switch. Everybody can play something else in the band.
Okay.
So
yeah, just about everybody, yeah. And I'm being humble and modest, but he can play about anything he puts in his hand. And Billy Flynn's the same way. Kenny Smith, the drummer, he can play harmonica. He can play piano. So... You know, we started to switch around a little bit more just because I think the audience kind of like, wait a second, that guy, I thought that was the drummer. Now he's playing harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get you playing on stage more often because Oscar's he's a great guitar player.
Well, I had heard that both of you played a variety of different instrumentations. I had gotten that information from somebody over at Alligator. Said, yeah, they both play everything. And I was just wondering, when you write, because you are known as the vocalist, do you focus on the lyrics first? Do you go with a melody? I mean, what's the process as far as the creation of a song, or is every song different?
Every song is different. Sometimes you get a melody line in your head, that's where you start. Sometimes you get a lyric in your head. That's where you start. Sometimes you get an overall idea or theme. That's where you start. Every song is different. Sometimes it hits you in the middle of the night. Sometimes it hits you in the shower. Sometimes it hits you driving the car. So you never know where the inspiration is going to come from and how it's going to come. But at some point, then you got to take that spark and try to make a fire out of it. And that's when he and I usually sit down and, you know, really kind of flesh things out.
Okay. Well, another thing I want to touch on is the fact, the sound, as you mentioned, very retro, very inspired by the 40s, 50s, and 60s sounds of the blues, all the different styles. The cover of this album immediately gets attention. It's an old-fashioned 1940s pinup girl sitting there answering a phone and saying, sorry, wrong number. Where did the idea for the retro look come from, and who did the illustrations on that? And I just find that fascinating. I love cover art.
Well, that's all Bruce Siglauer at Alligator Records. Apparently, he didn't think Oscar and I were attractive enough to sell lots of records on our looks alone. So he was insisting on putting a kind of hot pinup girl on the cover, and I've got a lot of good feedback on it. And Oscar and I are relegated to the back cover, which is fine.
Okay,
but you know, it does go along with the, you know, we're not a museum piece, but the music that we do kind of call home comes out of that era of the 50s and pinup girls. And so I think it's fitting for the style we play.
It certainly is. It's excellent. Let's talk briefly about the show itself. You're going to be coming to Memorial Opera House on October 20th with Shamika, as we mentioned. What is the set consisting of these days? Are you doing primarily stuff off Royal Mint? Are you going all the way back to the earlier 8 albums? Is it what's the ratio of new versus old?
I bet 50-50. We'll do a good share of stuff off the new album, and then we'll do some of the original material off the earlier ones. And then we always like to throw in a Muddy Water song or a Little Walter song, or you know, a song by one of the originators that we look up to and has been our inspiration.
Okay,
so that's what you can
go ahead.
Yeah, you can expect that, and we put on a really high energy live show. We, you know, blues is not a depressing music played by old people on a porch or something. It's really a vibrant, energetic music that can, you know, just really, I think, move the soul. So that's what we go for in our live shows.
Are you road testing any of the songs for the next album?
Not yet, right, Oscar?
Nah.
We got a little work yet, but we'll be getting those out on stage probably in the playing those live.
All right.
Well, me, I don't usually do mine early because I you know, it's to me, it's like if I start on them too early, you know, singing them too early, and then I'll get a little, because blues is feeling, you know, and sometimes I don't feel the song. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I have to, with me, it goes with feeling, because sometimes we have a set list, and I'll kind of deed away from that, because I'm playing, you know, I really play the crowd a lot, and if I'm kind of not feeling it, you know, then I say, Joe, hey, let's do this here instead. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm more of the low-downer blues type guy, and Joe more the high tempo.
Okay.
You know, it's like a good mix. You know, he'll pump it up, but I bring on, you know, I won't cry my beer.
Right. That is a good marriage. A good band is like a good marriage, I've been told, and it seems like you guys have that. The sugar, the spice, the heat, the cool, the slow, the fast. It seems like it all comes together with Cashbox Kings. And
we have fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will the next album, will it follow suit of Royal Mint? I mean, are the fans that turned on to you guys with this, is it obviously not going to be part two, but where are you going with the evolution of the sound with the next album?
It's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, we're pretty much like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So
okay.
Old school lowdown Chicago blues. A lot of timely topics we're going to be covering again that are straight on the headlines today and what people are experiencing in real life. We're going to be pushing the envelope in a couple different directions, you know, playing, getting some different styles that we haven't done, but it's going to be old school blues at the end of the day. That's going to be the defining characteristics of it.
Have you got all the songs written yet, or at least in part?
Yeah, we have a working list of about 20 songs. We have to whittle that down, and we're just kind of putting finishing touches on a bunch of it, and then we'll start kind of track them a little bit and get them into shape for the studio.
All right. Target date to go in the studio and target date that you're shooting for release?
January recording date and May release on Alligator.
Okay. You got a working title yet?
No, we do not. Let us know if you think of any. We're open to suggestions.
All right.
As I said, it's going to be a doozy.
I like that as the title. Right. This one's a doozy.
Yeah.
This album, as you mentioned, and in the live show, you do some traditional. You got Flood from Muddy Waters, and you've got, there's another one on here, that CZ Chenier, All Night Long, which has a little bit of a Cajun kind of groove. Is the next album also going to have a couple of salutes, tip of the hats, to some of those that have come before you, like this one, or will it be more all original stuff that the two of you have written?
Well, more original as possible, I think, you know.
Okay.
But, We always will throw something deep in there, you know.
Absolutely. We like to really come with our own music, but it's going to be informed by those originators. But then we always pay tribute to a few of them on each album, and we'll pick some deep cuts that people haven't heard in a long time.
All right. Well, is there anything we haven't touched on, gentlemen, that you'd like to let people know before we say goodbye?
Come on down to the theater, Valparaiso, on the 20th. It's going to be killer double bill. A lot of energy, a lot of fun. Please check us out at CashboxKings.com. We got video, bio, all sorts of music you can listen to there. And thank you for playing the blues. Thank you to all your listeners out there for listening to the blues. And hope to see you in a couple weeks.
All right. I'll be there. I'll be there for that. We're going to close out now with a traditional old school song. This is one of the oldest songs that I know of that is well known by the public. It has Traveling Riverside Blues. You guys give it a good treatment here. What's it like, final question, to take on a standard like Traveling Riverside Blues and make it your own, put your fingerprints on it?
Well, that was more or less my... one of my ideas, and Joel Patterson. you know, one of the other guys that played with us. So, you know, I like I say, something I hear, and I'm like, oh, yeah, man, that's it, you know. So, and then it talks about a place where some of my kinfolk, Rosedale, and I have kinfolk there, and I just thought it would be nice.
All right. Tipping the hat to Robert Johnson. This is the Cashbox Kings. Again, follow them at cashboxkings.com and catch him on October 20th at Valparaiso's historic Memorial Opera House, itself turning 125 years old this year. It's the place where music comes alive in Northwest Indiana. Cashbox Kings, Royal Mint. And gentlemen, thank you again. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You do. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Take care.
All right. We've been talking with Oscar Wilson and Joe Nosek of the Cashbox Kings. And as I mentioned, let's tip the hat to Robert Johnson. This is their take on Traveling Riverside Blues.
Well, if your man get personal, want you to have your fun. If your man get personal, want you to have your fun. Well, come on back to Price Point, Barrel House all night long. I got women's in Vicksburg, clean on into Tennessee. I got women's in Vicksburg, clean on into Tennessee. But my Pride Point rider hops all over me. Ain't going to stay no color, but a frontier's is crowned in gold. Is crown and gold. She got a mortgage on my body, a lien on my soul. Take my rider by my side. We can still do the Bell House, cause it's on the riverside. Well, you can squeeze my lemon till the juice run down my, till the juice run down my leg, woman. You know what I'm talking about. Well, you can squeeze my lemon till the juice run down my leg. Well, I'm going back to Price Point. I'll be rocking to my head.
As old school as it gets, Robert Johnson and Traveling Riverside Blues. That is the Cashbox Kings off Royal Mint. 13 songs on this great album. It's their first for Alligator Records. They got a new one coming out, as yet untitled, and still working on that. That'll be out sometime next year. But they'll be live performing a good chunk of the songs off this, as well as some of their earlier albums for Blind Pig Records. And Cashbox Kings will be performing with Shamika Copeland. And Shamika's going to be there with them, and maybe they'll even join each other on stage if Otis and Joe are correct. Maybe they were hinting at that. But again, those tickets on sale at the venue, at the box office. You can also go to mohlive.com or memorialoperahouse.com and get your tickets there. And Shamika Copeland and Cashbox Kings both signed to Alligator Records. Brightside Music bringing them to town. I'm so excited about this show. I think it's going to be an amazing concert. Two of the my favorite blues artists right now of the contemporary world together. Alligator Records, kudos to them for keeping the blues alive. Bruce Iglauer, who is the founder and president of the label, also has a brand new book out that I suggest you check out. I believe it is officially released now. If not, it will be soon, so you can check all your local book haunts out there. If you go to brick and mortar stores, those that are still out there, or you can get it online, and I'm sure there's more information at alligatorrecords.com on Bruce's book. It's he's been in the business for a number of decades now. And he was a fan that, resurrected the blues in Chicago by getting some of his favorite artists together. And, of course, he's been nurturing it by developing all these new artists along the way, like Shamika and Cashbox King. So kudos to Bruce on his new book. Hopefully, I'd love to be able to get Bruce on and talk to him about that book on a future show. So that's just something to think about. Something else to think about is the fact that coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have some very scary stories all about Indiana. Don Bernacki is going to join us. He is the filmmaker behind Mystic Indiana. It's a classic Indiana film about haunted areas here. And he's working with Mr. Merriman, Jim Merriman, that I know you, Mark Merriman. I'm sorry, I said Jim. Mark Merriman, who is the storyteller on some of this. And it's celebrating his 15th year since Mystic Indiana came out. They're going to do a special screening locally here in Northwest Indiana coming up in about a week or so. So we're going to have Don talking about the film, the making of the film, the new screening of it, and more in just a few. But before we get to that, I'm going to leave you with one more song from Cashbox Kings. And this is an old Muddy Waters song called Flood. It's the third track on Royal Mint. And there's a reason for me playing it, and that is because Muddy's youngest son, Joseph Mojo Morganfield, is going to be live in studio this coming Tuesday. So Tuesday, Midwest Beat at 7 p.m. will feature the one and only Mojo Morganfield. Will be debuting songs off his new released EP called Mojo Rising, including a tribute to Chess Records called Just Play Chess. And we'll be talking to Mojo about that and all sorts of other things that he's got going on in his career. He's been a guest here before, but I think he's got a lot to talk about right now. So let's do this in tribute to Muddy Waters and in honor of his son who's joining us, Joseph Mojo Morganfield, on Tuesday. This is a classic Muddy song from the Cashbox Kings, and then we'll have Don Bernicke joining us. This is Flood off Royal Mint.
home.